Have you enjoyed listening to the CrowdPaw Leadership Podcast? Are you looking for a way to support it? Maybe you just want some swag. Get some CrowdPaw merch today. We have shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, and so much more. Go to CrowdPaw.org/merch, CrowdPaul.org/merch. Looking forward to seeing your CrowdPaw look.
Turn this up. Your professional development is one of the keys to your career success. When you combine your desire to grow with actionable steps, your journey to success becomes an incredible reality.
Hi, I'm Paul Parambi, aka CrowdPaul, and welcome to CrowdPaul Leadership, where we learn how to become the most incredible versions of ourselves by learning from each other. First off, if you're only listening to this episode, I want to make sure that you know you can also watch it on YouTube. Regardless if you're listening or watching the show, I really appreciate you doing that. Bonus points for doing both as well. Today, I have the honor of having Camille Smith on the show. She's a chemical engineer, social entrepreneur, and rapidly growing content creator based in Philadelphia. She's also the founder and CEO of STEM Social. So now just a little bit about you, Camille, but how about you introduce yourself the way you would?
Yeah, no, of course. So again, it's funny. I think recently that's definitely been my tagline, chemical engineer, social entrepreneur, content creator, but really just a multi-hyphenate. I have a lot of different passions. Science and STEM in general has always been like my first love, but I think in the past 2 years, I've been branching into more of the entrepreneurship and like branching into a personal branding and like things like that. So best way to describe myself would be the master of none, jack of all trades, multi-hyphenate, whatever makes the most sense, you know? But I'm happy to be here.
I'm really happy to have you here as well. I definitely relate to being master of none, kind of jack of all trades, a lot of different random things I do. I mentioned before we started recording, I'm also a chemical engineer as well. Chemical Engineers United. So I'm curious for you, because I think for everyone's a little bit different. How did you choose chemical engineering? Did you always know you wanted to be an engineer?
No, not at all. I've always been very curious. I've always loved learning. So like that was always like a constant throughout my life. I think when I got into middle school time frame, like I was super into school in general. So like I went to public school, but in my public school system, we had like honors classes or like, you know, they were a little bit or notorious, a little bit more difficult, or like AP or advanced placement classes. So all of my coursework, I was, you know, in honors, AP, if it was available to me, except for science. And I remember like in seventh and eighth grade, like that really, sounds funny, like that really irritated me that like I was not like a science person, but like every other subject was like easier. Because usually I think people don't like math. I was, you know, my dad is super into math. So like, I don't know, I was always okay with like, you know, numbers and things, but science just never clicked. And I think that was the reason that it kind of pushed me towards that. I realized that I was okay at chemistry. Physics was cool because, again, it's more math-based, and then also was okay at math. So when it came time to undergrad, actually, fun fact, I applied to all of my schools. I applied to 8 schools, I think, 7 out of the 8 schools as chemistry. And then where I ended up going to school, that was the only school I applied for chemical engineering. That just made the most sense, you know, when I eventually decided to attend undergrad and then, you know, stuck it out for the 4 years.
That's really interesting. So I guess, what made you apply to chemical engineering at one school and then 7 of chemistry?
Great questions. I honestly think I contribute so much of like different major life decisions to my dad, just like randomly saying things. But also fun fact, I wanted to be a doctor initially. So I was like, okay, like I'm going to do the pre-med classes, you know, a lot of like the life sciences, but I was a little bit nervous to major in like a general biology. So it was like a random conversation I was having, like maybe like walk past my dad and he's like, oh, have you considered chemical engineering? And I had no idea what that was. And he's like, oh, well, you're good at chemistry. Like you're good at physics. You're good at math. Like that could be something, a plan B to my plan A, which was of course going to med school. So in undergrad, I was a chemical engineering major, but I was also pre-med, which you probably can assume how taxing that period of time was, but we did it. But then I actually realized I liked chemical engineering and I like the problem solving associated with it. So then I stuck it out. And now I decided against going to med school. And, you know, now actually I'm a chemical engineer or scientist for my day job.
That's really cool. So at what point did you realize that chemical engineering was going to be what you wanted to do versus, because you said you were pre-med doing chemical engineering?
Yes. I failed a class my junior year. And it like all like boy, everything's like compounds and snowballs into, you know, a last action or a last result, right? So I had the really amazing opportunity to study abroad in college. The chemical engineers were only allowed to study abroad their sophomore year, second semester, because that was the only way that we could fit all of like the appropriate courses. The only issue is my engineering school and like school in general is too small that like when you have sequential classes, like a general chemistry one, a general chemistry two, you only can really take those in that specific semester. So like a fall semester or spring semester. So spring semester, sophomore year, I went abroad and organic chemistry two was not offered while I was abroad. So I was like, okay, like if I go abroad, I'm going to have to take it the second portion of Orgo, my junior year, second semester. So almost like a year and some change. You know, after I officially took Orgo 1, which Orgo 1 I was not good at either. I didn't have a very good understanding. So I think not having the best foundation in Orgo 1, waiting a year and some change to take Orgo 2, and then also junior year, second semester is notorious in the chemical engineering curriculum of just being like really hard. You know, you're doing your mass transfers, you're doing your heat transfers, thermo 2 or thermo 1, whichever, you know, makes the most sense. And then also for my pre-med classes, I was taking genetics, 21 credits of just the worst classes that you could possibly think of. 21 credits of the worst class you could possibly think of. And Orgo 2 was just the class that I could not keep up with. My teacher had like weekly quizzes. And it was like, if you had to miss a class for being sick, like God forbid, like you were behind. So yeah, failed that class, went through, I don't want to say a midlife crisis because that's not what it was, but like an existential crisis. I was like, oh my gosh, am I smart? Like, can I do this? Like, what do I think, you know, of myself being able to actually go to med school if I'm failing classes? Mind you, everyone around me is like, you were taking 21 credits of like highly technical courses. But I didn't view it that way because I had a perception that, you know, I was a school person. So that's when I started to kind of pick my head up and look around to, okay, I was taking this chemi curriculum, you know, the past few years, but taking it with the goal of not eventually using it. And then I feel like that kind of shifted my view to be like, okay, like what if I actually did use this curriculum outside of course, like the problem solving and things like that. And then I ended up taking an elective my senior year, first semester. And I was like, ah, like I like it over here. And then I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, long-winded, but throughout my life, there's been so many like actions that interact with other actions that we're here now.
That's really cool. And I would say long-winded is perfect for podcasts. So don't feel like you're being long-winded at all, just to get more insight into you and your story. And it's really cool how you mentioned that it's like different things that come up that you didn't necessarily realize at the time and it led to something else.
Right. Yeah, no, I feel like throughout my life, I've been very blessed to, I actually was having a conversation with a friend recently about the concept of luck, and everyone like kind of always like turns their head around like, oh, I'm not lucky, like I do XYZ, but luck is just when preparation meets opportunity. And I think I've always been like a very prepared person when it came to school. Like I love school. Like I love the structure that it provides me. I like the regimen of like having a coursework and even like homework, which I know is a hot take. I like homework.
That's a really hot take.
But it's more a function of like, I think the part that people don't like is like getting graded for it or like taking a test that could like negatively impact your grade or like whatever the case may be. But learning something or like sitting down and learning something that you're interested in and then being able to like see whether you actually understand it. Like I like that aspect of it. Again, hot take. But yeah, I've just been very lucky that I've been a very prepared person over time. And then when certain opportunities would present themselves, even if they didn't look like opportunities initially, because realistically that failure in that class, like, you know, was very hard for me mentally, emotionally, but it put me on the path that I'm on now. And I'm really, really happy where I am. But yeah, very blessed that things have kind of, even if I didn't see it, were leading me to where I am now. And everything is connected in some way, shape, or form, or at least that's been my experience.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I really like the perspective of even seeing that failure more as an opportunity to lead you to where you are right now. And there's where you talk about the preparedness. And I think that a lot of intentionality, which being intentional is like one of my favorite words. Or it's like the last 5 years I've been super intentional to different things that I'm doing. It sounds like you have been as well.
Yeah.
It's a key leadership trait, this incredible leadership, and really understanding yourself and what you want to do and starting to walk in that direction.
Right.
And another key thing that you mentioned is that just you can have something you want to do. Like at first you want to be a doctor, but you might come across other things that you're more passionate about, or circumstances happen and it's okay to lean into something else as you come across it.
Yeah. I think when that, during that period of my life, I was super hard on myself because I think something that people, again, I can only speak from my experience. When I was growing up, it was like, okay, when you set a goal, like you accomplish that goal. Like that's what you're doing. You're going 110, 200% like towards that goal. So that was the first time in my life that I had set a goal that I realized as I got closer to it, oh, like I'm not as interested in it as I initially thought. Or I was more interested in the perception or like the view of what it possibly be as opposed to like the actual thing itself. And that was super hard. Like, I don't want to paint the picture that it was not difficult. Like when I say existential crisis, like that summer post junior year was super, super hard. And it was very hard to see any of my other accomplishments because I was like, oh, I was so focused on, well, I'm not going to end up doing like this specific thing. And give yourself the space to feel those feelings, but it's really okay to evolve over time. It would be crazy even for people that set, you know, the few kids that are like, I'm going to be a doctor at six and they're actually like doctors now. Even like the type of doctor that they want to be, I'm sure has changed over time based off of knowledge that they've gained or experience that they've gotten. So it'd be kind of crazy if you set a goal for yourself as a child or like super early in a process when you don't actually have that experience. And then literally you get to the end and it's the exact same thing. So once I kind of reframed my mindset in that way, I was like, oh, like it's okay. I still want to be patient focused. So like I work at pharma now, I still am patient like focused. Like the work that I'm doing is for, improving the quality of life of others, but it's just in a different, you know, industry or a different space, and that's okay. So I'm still accomplishing the essence of like what initially attracted me to healthcare, but just, you know, again, accomplishing it in a different way.
I love that. How you're able to tie that together, accomplishing the essence of what you wanted. I think like when you're 6 years old, there's a very limited amount of things you can know.
Right.
And then, I mean, I feel like I'm still learning a bunch of things every day. I know you mentioned like the whole school process and testing your knowledge is something that you love and you are passionate about. I would say I really love learning new things, whether that's from reading or podcasts or meeting people. That's why I enjoy podcasting. That gets you talk to people like you and learn more about them. I'm just a genuinely curious person. So I to ask different questions and just get down to the heart of things. So I think it's really critical that you mentioned those things.
You know, again, I think that's what makes life. I was having a very like, you know, life is great conversation with my friend, but I'm like, that's like the essence of the human experience. Like, I love people like you and I consider myself very curious, very inquisitive, like, you know, diving deeper past whatever your initial perception of something is always going to be important. So I love people like yourself, again, that have podcasts that are actively trying to make that normal, because I feel like the hustle of life can kind of make you like not think as, you know, deeply or critical about things. I recently had a conversation with my mom that whenever I ask, how are you? Like my friends know, like I'm like, I won't ask you if I don't actually want to sit down and like hear what you have to say. So I was with my mom and I was like, oh, like, how are you doing? And she gave like some like weird answer. I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean? She goes, oh, well, I wasn't expecting you to ask me. I'm like, well, why would you answer like that and not expect me to follow up and ask questions? But to your point, you know, a lot of times people, you know, you pass by, you know, hey, how are you? Oh, you can be having the worst day of your life. But platforms like this allow people to have a space of being like, oh, it's okay to dive deeper. You know, so I appreciate being able to speak with you about stuff like this because it's important.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you making the time to be on here to talk about it, because like to your point, we're so busy and there's so many things you could be doing, and there's a whole hustle culture, entrepreneurial culture, which we should, I think this is a perfect segue to talk about that, because you're working full time and the pharmaceutical or pharma side of things. And you're also an entrepreneur. So I'm curious, how does that happen? Like, what makes you pursue entrepreneurship in addition?
Great question. Post-undergrad, so again, I studied chemical engineering. I was one of four Black students, like Black chemical engineers, and one of two Black women chemical engineers. And when I graduated, none of my friends like lived close by. Like, so it was so funny because I feel like when you go to college for the first time, you're meeting all these new people that are like literally coming from all over the world, all over the country, whatever the case may be. You make these amazing friendships. You're like, oh my gosh, like these are my people. And then you graduate and everyone literally goes back to wherever they live, or, you know, they might move, you know, for a job or, you know, whatever makes the most sense for them at the time. So when I graduated, all the friends that I had really found community with, or I joke around, say trauma bonded with, like as chemical engineers, like they all left, right?
It's real. The trauma bonding's real.
Until you pull an all-nighter, like a legitimate all-nighter, trying to study for something that you know that you're not going to understand, it's something. So yeah, we were all so close, but all of them left. So I started working, was hoping, you know, finding community would be easier or like manageable. I'm a very outgoing person. I've always been very outgoing. But the community I was looking for, especially a community of people that looked like me or had shared experiences, wasn't there. At least it wasn't there where I was looking. So then I was like, okay, I need to find something, not only for like my personal selfish gain, quite frankly, but I also was simultaneously creating content as well, talking about my experience as a Black woman in STEM, talking about pharmaceuticals, or I specifically work in biopharmaceuticals, what it is, you know, answering questions for people. And then realizing in real time that those people also were experiencing the exact same experience as I was. So I was like, okay, what if we all hikied at mini golf together? Like, I'll set it up, I'll figure out how much it's going to be. And initially, my first event was just basically like when you go out to dinner with like a big group of friends and like one person puts their card down, basically. So like I figured out how much the round of mini golf would be. I figured out how much like shared apps would be divided by the 10 women that I wanted to show up. And that's what we did. And we had a ball. And I was like, wow, like this is so cool. All these women live, you know, in my city. They're not all chemical engineers, but they're all in STEM. So again, that we have a shared experience. And it was back to how everything's connected. When I made a recap like video, like talking about like the event, people from other cities were like, oh, well, you know, you travel a lot. So if you come here, like maybe you could set up something here. And I'm like, okay. Didn't really think too much about it because people on the internet lie sometimes, you know, like they'll like, they'll say some, oh, I'll pull up. Don't pull up. You're just sitting there. Also like the stranger danger aspect, you know, we don't want to, turn our head from that too. But people were persistent. People were really persistent. And I think it was a function of I was consistently showing up as myself and sharing my experiences. And like the amount of like comments and just DMs that I've gotten, that was a very positive thing for others because they didn't know that other people were experiencing that, led to the community of like hosting events, which led to STEM Social actually incorporating as like an actual hub for Black aspiring and established STEM professionals. So it was similar to my STEM journey in general. Like there were certain things that kind of were working simultaneously or kind of compounded on one another that led me on this path. I didn't take any business classes in college. Like I'm learning all of this on the fly. But you would know chemical engineering, problem solving, like we think in like systems, and nobody understands that when I say that. I'm like, no, everything is a system, like everything. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, no, but like in my head, I can see it. This is how all this is working. So again, business also is systems. So I've been able to kind of use the chem problem solving approach to be able to grow STEM Social to where it is. And hopefully it keeps growing, you know?
That's really cool. From mini golf
to STEM Social. Right. Everything starts somewhere.
Yeah, that might be the title of this episode. We'll see. That's really cool how it's throughout your journey is that you just going after things and it just falling together. But what I want to draw on is that not only it doesn't just fall together by itself. I sense that you're like, there's some self-awareness, especially when you're talking about like your transition into staying in chemical engineering. And then with the STEM Social piece is just like listening to what people are asking for as well. And then figuring out how to do it, which not everyone does it. Sometimes they'll just like, this is how I want to do it and not listen to anyone else. And it doesn't work.
Right. I recently did a panel at NSBE, the National Society of Black Engineers. And that was actually what the panel was about. It was talking about like how to start with an idea and like scale it into an actual business venture. And something that I said was, I think it's very important for founders to keep the integrity of whatever they're trying to create in the world is necessary. You know, so for me, that was, I wanted community. I wanted friends, you know, selfishly, but then realized that that was a need for other people. And then mutually was like, okay, you know, like, let's do it. But asking for feedback in real time, I think, is really important, because something that's, when you're trying to scale something that's not just for one person, because a larger community is, again, just made up of its people, like those one individual, you know, wants and needs. Stem Social is a million times better because I was able to ask my community, like, hey, what cities do y'all actually need us in? Or, you know, do you want it to remain intimate? Which we, of course, as an organization, we've stayed. Or we prioritize intimacy, like, throughout our events. Or, like, knowing your target demographic. People in STEM are a little awkward. Like, we're, like, cute and quirky, you know? And it's a cute thing about
us. Just a little, right?
A little bit. Again, for me, it's very endearing.
Yeah.
But
great.
I think about that when I, you know, curate events. Because I'm like, okay, like, me, I told you guys earlier, I'm an outgoing person. I can talk to a wall and, like, I can talk to anybody, like, and they'll be like, wow, that was the best conversation ever. And I'll be like, who is that? Like, who are you talking to? That's literally learning. I love learning about people in real time, right? But for events, I'm like, okay, everyone's not like that. So, like, maybe it's STEM Social, which we do. We facilitate our events. So all we're asking for is for you to show up. If you have the courage to show up because you know that you need community in that way, we will take care of the rest. We're asking the questions. We're helping, you know, if somebody's a little bit slow to get in the conversations, like before, like my team, my ambassadors are like pulling them into conversations, helping them like start that.
Are you wondering what's next? Has everything you tried failed? Or maybe you just feel stuck? Then coaching may be right for you. The coaching relationship is a relationship totally centered on you. So what are you waiting for? Go to incredipaul.org/coaching so I can help you become the most incredible version of yourself.
And that was really a function of me listening to the community I was aiming to serve. So there's definitely a balance. Founders definitely keep the integrity of like what you are aiming for, or the essence kind of, which we referenced earlier, but it's only going to be sustainable over time if you have like that active feedback, or you're receptive to active feedback from who you're trying to serve.
Yeah, that active feedback is so crucial. I think it's another leadership aspect is really understanding your audience, understanding your people, and meeting them where they are. Mm-hmm. Like when I talk to leaders or work with different leaders, I think a lot of times people think leadership is easy. They're like, oh, I just have to set the tone of like, you do this, you do that, and they treat everyone the same. Like, leadership is hard because you can't treat everyone the same.
You can't. You cannot. Actually, do you know what the Clifton Strengths or Gallup is? Mm-hmm. So individualization is one of my top five. And like, literally when I read it, I was like, no, because it sounds weird to say like, no, don't treat everybody the same. Because it's like, what do you mean by that? But it's like, no, everyone has different needs, different communication styles. They get gratification differently. Whether that be like, for me, if I do a presentation and you decide to message me in Teams, like, hey, like that was super good, I'm going to be on a high for the rest of the day, you know, like just say like, hey, like I see what you're doing and like you're doing a good job, versus other people increase my paycheck. I mean, you can increase my paycheck too and tell me I did a good job. But for me, like I like that, like words of affirmation. And my manager and I had a conversation, like he knows about me that like, if he takes the extra step to affirm me in that way, like I'm going to be just happier in general. But it takes a leader to be able to know Camille likes to be affirmed in that way, but this person likes, you know, quarterly happy hours, or like, you know what I'm saying?
Terrible
example, I guess. But
no, it's true though. That's one of the people I work with right now is definitely the person that wants the happy hour. I just want food. Yeah. If there's free food there, that's gonna make me happy. It could be like $1.50 hot dog from Costco. Like, you just made my day because there's food there.
Right.
But just understanding people.
Yeah. And so again, to your point, it's, I think, very important for leaders to understand. Even something that I've learned with like growing my team. Sample has a team of 24 people. And it was funny because when I initially onboarded our most recent group of ambassadors, one of our newer ambassadors was like, oh, like, do you actually meet with every single person? I'm like, well, when I start, like, I want to be able to have like a relationship with you. What are your goals? You're like, what we all care about some social, but like, what are you actually aiming to gain from this? Is it just you like service, or you like, you know, in general being helpful? Is it like you like to be a part of a team? How can I affirm you? You know, do you want to be a supportive role, or do you want to be leading the planning of something? Like, what do you like so that I can empower you to like have ownership over things? And that's been something that I've been trying to get better at, because people get leaders and managers confused. They're not the same thing, or at least they're not mutually exclusive. You know what I'm saying? And I, again, I feel like you definitely know, like, managers, yes, to your point, you do this, you know, set the tone and kind of move on, versus leaders have that emotional awareness, that emotional intelligence as well, that I can add on to, you know, whatever the work aspect is. So I'm trying to be a better leader as opposed to, you know, simply a manager. No shade to the managers of the world. Managers are important, but hopefully that distinction is there and you guys understand what I mean.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think manager is where you start, but you don't want to stay there.
Yeah, yes, I agree.
Yeah, because manager is just having the title. So I do a lot of stuff with John Maxwell, Maxwell Leadership, and he talks about leadership being influence. Mm-hmm. Nothing more, nothing less. Because you can have influence and leadership without being in a management or leadership title. And vice versa, you can be in a management title and have zero influence, because people are just there because they have to be there, because you have the power to fire them, and they will do the bare minimum.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel like I, in my professional career, eventually, I would love to be in more of a leadership role that I don't necessarily have to have reports, but like, again, using my influence, using my leadership skills to be able to drive a project or product or whatever I end up landing on, you know, eventually. I find that to be honestly much more difficult when you can rely on the power dynamic that we just referenced, like, oh, like, you're only here because like either this pays your rent, or, you know, you have to be here. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to, like, you know, get things done because you have that dynamic, versus a, I call him like a matrix leader, like someone that kind of like sits in the middle of a bunch of different working teams and has to translate, like, you know, this group's language for this group's language to be able to drive a project forward. Like, that is hard. That is what I want to do. Because I feel like that's, again, a mark of like a very, very good leader. So we'll see. Eventually, I'll get there.
Yeah, I have no doubt that you'll definitely get to do that, and even get the leadership title too, if you want it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think the key thing with that is I've done a lot of stuff with continuous improvement, and it's very much like that, is that I know these people don't report to me. They report to like production manager or someone on the production side, and I have to influence them to be able to do the things. So they're actually helpful for them. But what it's definitely a skill I've developed, still developing, is you really have to understand what process is and why, what are the pain points within that process. Because at the beginning they're like, hey, why are we doing all these extra things? And like, well, these extra things, well, are to help you to make sure that your things are more standardized, you have less variability, all of these different things.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't know that unless I understood that as a person.
Right. And then even taking it a step further, when you're in that role, especially as it relates to pain points, sometimes it's even getting or building a relationship with their actual like manager. Because there's been times on projects that it's like, oh, well, my manager wants me to prioritize this thing. So I'm like, okay, if I have a good relationship with the manager and I'm like, hey, can we make a compromise that they can dedicate 40% of their time, and like, you know, they can do 60% to the other thing. Once you have a relationship with them, then they can also use that. And that's also influence as well. So yeah, no, to your point, I think it's very important to be able to use your influence on an individual basis, and you'll be able to have a much better outcome. And that's something I've learned very quickly as I've been trying to scale STEM Social, but it's been good. It's been really good.
That's really cool. So tell me more about like STEM Social, like how long has it been around? Like how has it been going, or what are you most excited about just like as a whole about STEM Social?
Yeah, STEM Social unofficially has been around for, I want to say 3 years. So I've been hosting. So that mini golf story was about 3 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
We officially incorporated March of 2023, actually. So it's been a year in a few months. Well, actually, oh my goodness, two years.
Yeah, oh, wow. It's 2 years. That's at this recording. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay. So 2 years and since a month, which has been really, really cool. And I think last year, for me, I'm thinking about last year because last year was like exponential growth for us. So I feel like last year felt like everything was happening so quickly that like my perception of time just, we grew like, we went to 5 or 6 new cities because I traveled so much last year, which was insane. But it's been going really well. What I'm excited for, of course, getting to as many cities as possible, not increasing the headcount because, again, intimacy is very important. But, you know, being able to spread the influence of the organization. I also think at the end of this year, we're having our first summit, which I'm very excited about. So that's going to be really cool. And I think what I'm most excited about for Summit is how we're going to be doing it, because it also goes back to the learning aspect. I think sometimes you go to conferences and it's a lot of personal professional development is very important, of course, but I also really want to have that technical piece. So like, we're actually going to have workshops, panels, talks, whatever the case may be, but like, you know, personal, professional, technical, we're actually have things like hands-on things that people are going to be learning while they're there, which again, for me, I'm really excited about because I feel like you don't see that as much at conferences. So it'll have, you know, the learning portion, but we'll also make sure everyone's actually socializing. I'm an orientation counselor at heart. I love icebreakers. I love like working in a room, making sure that everyone is good and comfortable. So it's going to be really good. It's going to be November, I believe, 7th through 9th in Philadelphia. So we've been full steam ahead trying to put that on. We already got our venue, all that good stuff. So I believe registration should be dropping relatively soon. So I can share that with you to share with your community too.
Yes, definitely share it with my community. And definitely, I want to be there too.
Yeah, that I would love to have you.
That sounds like an amazing event. I've only been to Philadelphia once. And I have a good friend that lives out there too. So I
come
need to, I need to come out and get some Philly cheesesteak.
Of course.
You're also the reigning Super Bowl champs too, so.
And talk about it. Go Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly. So that is, it's really funny, but just learning more about your story. And I guess I kind of kept it in limbo. So now there's a lot of similarities within our stories. I know we talked about chemical engineering. Also, I had chemical engineering as a backup as well. I wanted to go into med school, but yeah. Exactly. There's so many different things. But I didn't want to like disrupt the conversation because it was a conversation I had with my dad about like, if I didn't go into chemical engineering, if I didn't go to med school, become a doctor, I was between biology or chemistry as my major. I was applying for different schools. And so I was like, well, I like chemistry, I like math and science, so I kind of chose chemical engineering, or really more so biomedical engineering, right. And then some of the schools I applied to didn't have biomedical engineering, and so I ended up going to Iowa State, pursued chemical engineering, got super involved in research, undergraduate research all 4 years, and that kind of led me down the path I am right now, and even the individualization within Clifton Strengths is also one of my top 5 as well.
Really?
So it's super fun. I think it's 4th or 5th for me.
Yeah.
But
I think it's 4th for me. I'd have to look at it again, but I think it's 4th.
Yeah. So it's just really funny to see that. Like all the stuff you mentioned, like I resonate with that. Like I get that. Shoot.
I love this. And then, again, to bring it back to this community, this platform that you've created, like the fact that we're even able to, like, we didn't know each other before this, but like be able to be like, oh my goodness, like we have so many similarities. And like that's, I think, the beauty of, again, your podcast, building communities, whether it be online or in person, because again, I've been able to meet so many people that maybe I would have not naturally crossed paths with, but now are like actual like people in my life that I'm like, wow, this is so crazy. So now I have a Kimmy that was going to be a pre-med. Individualization, we have to talk about our other top 5 because I'm interested.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but no, that's literally so funny. And then where did you grow up? Can I ask you questions?
Yeah, go for it.
We can have a conversation.
I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in St. Louis.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Did you like growing up in St. Louis?
Yeah, St. Louis is fun, but I moved to Nebraska in high school, like my sophomore year of high school. Okay. I went to college in Iowa. I worked out in the Southwest for a couple of years in Albuquerque and then came back to St. Louis to work out here. But now I'm in Nashville, so I've been like all over.
I like Nashville. I went to Nashville for the first time 2 years ago with my older sister. I'm one of three girls, so I have two older sisters. And my middle older sister, for whatever reason, was just very affectionate with Nashville. We had a ball. We had a ball. Now, granted, I love like the Nashville's like the Nashville hot chicken or fried hot chicken, I guess. Very good. But also, my mom's name is Hattie. So Hattie B's was like this like huge thing.
And I was love like, oh, Hattie B's.
It's so good. It's so good. So that was like a cute thing that like me and my sister, we have to go there like when we go there. Now, granted, I tried a lot of the other, I guess, competitive like stores. I just think I have like an emotional tie to Hattie B's because that's my mom's name. But also, it's so good. It's and the so food good. There in general is very good. Yeah, Nashville.
So I guess for you, I know like you're in Philadelphia now. Are you from that area as well?
Yeah. So I grew up in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, which is like a suburb. It's an hour outside of Philadelphia. And I grew up there my entire life with mom, dad, my middle older sister, Jasmine. My oldest sister is older enough than me. That didn't flow right. She's older than me. that we didn't grow up like in our parents' house at the same time, but like we have a very good relationship. But so when I was growing up, it was just me and my sister Jasmine, Bucks County, and then went to Villanova for my undergraduate degree and then moved to Philadelphia. So like Villanova is like maybe 20 minutes outside of the city. Some people call it a Philly school. It's not a Philly school. It is very much in the suburbs. But anytime that we win like you know, basketball tournaments, whatever, we always end up having like our parades over there. But and then I actually moved to Philly when I started working. So I've always been in this general area. Like I've always been in Pennsylvania. And then of course I studied abroad. So like that was like a nice experience for like 6 months or so. But yeah, always been in Pennsylvania. But I travel a lot. So like somebody yesterday actually asked me like, oh, would you ever move? I think the only place I would ever move to would be Chicago. And my dad is actually from Chicago originally. So I don't know. I feel like between Chicago and Philly, I would probably go back and forth. But I love Philly. You need to come now for summer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly for the event. I'll be out there. And my friends are trying to get me out there. So it would be dual purpose to come out there. And my brother lives in New York City too. So it's not too far.
Exactly. I was going to say, so I really haven't explored the Midwest in general. Again, like Chicago, of course, is like, do people in the Midwest consider Chicago? I mean, it is geographically, but like it feels like people like associate it differently.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the Midwest, but it's also the third largest city in America. So
it's
closer to New York than even St. Louis. And even St. Louis is a larger city, but it's not on the same level as Chicago. Very much different from the rest of the Midwest.
Right. Okay. So what is your favorite part about living or growing up in the Midwest? And then what's something that like was not the best or something that you were interested in exploring other places or like trying to find something that maybe the Midwest didn't offer you growing up?
That's a really good question. I don't think I've ever been asked that question before.
Really? Because again, I don't know much about it.
Yeah, so I guess because I've got to travel a lot to work as well, I think the Midwest, for the most part, it's kind of like even, like in the middle. It's pretty fast paced.
Yeah.
The West can be kind of slower paced. I think the Midwest is kind of like an even kind of a pace. It's pretty friendly too. I would say now living in Nashville that the South is definitely more friendly. So the hospitality is a thing. I did not realize that. Mm-hmm. But the Midwest is pretty friendly. I will say I feel like I'm definitely more of a bigger city Midwestern person. So like I like St. Louis. I like Kansas City. I like Chicago. But some of these smaller cities in the Midwest, like even Omaha, which Omaha is for the Midwest, is not
Omaha,
that
Nebraska,
small.
Right?
Omaha, Nebraska. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like the metro area is like 1 million people, but like the city itself is like 500,000, which for the Midwest is actually fairly large.
That's a lot, right?
But for me, Omaha's kind of small for me.
Okay. Okay. I actually recently heard about Omaha, of course, knowing like it's a city, right? But one of my friends was going there for something. Man, I forget what it was. But yeah, I really haven't explored the Midwest. I would love to explore the Midwest because I do think growing up, my main perception was like there is like a lot of like hiking, a lot of nature and things like that. And I love stuff like that. I think one of the downsides, I guess, of living, you know, in an urban area or in a city is like you don't have as many green spaces. So I think growing up in the suburbs of Philly, like I was so used to trees and hiking trails and like stuff like that versus in Philly, like you have to like drive. You have to be intentional to be able to like find spaces like that. We have like maybe two or three larger parks to like walk around in versus when I grew up, like I feel like the entire area was like a park dang near. So I assume that that's a little bit like the Midwest in general.
It is. Yeah. That's a good assumption in the Midwest.
Yeah. Sure. Go hiking or something. I used to have a hiking club in high school. Also a fun fact. A lot of people don't know that. We literally would I was the only person with a car because I bought my car when I was 16. It was a 2001 Honda CR-V. I'll never forget her. And literally be like, all my friends would like pack into like my Honda CR-V and we would like drive to neighboring like mountains or like hiking trails and stuff. And everyone always was like, oh, familiar car, so old. Why don't you get a newer car? But they didn't have a car. I'm like, you're focused on the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
You're focused on the wrong thing. Exactly. So yeah, maybe I'll come out to the Midwest just to see what the hiking is like.
Yeah, for sure. I can definitely give you some recommendations.
Perfect.
Well, I want to make sure we got not off topic. It was a good conversation, but I want to make sure we're talking about you because we're almost out of time. But I want to make sure if there's anything else we haven't talked about either with you or your story or anything you want to leave with the listeners before we wrap things up.
Yeah, I think my advice recently that's been resonating with me is like fail forward, fail often. I think something that I've learned over the past year and a half, 2 years now, is that some of the most successful people that I have around me are not afraid to fail. And like they fail very often. And then they actually reflect on not necessarily, oh my goodness, like I didn't accomplish said thing, but being intentional, being self-reflective of like, oh, like why did this actually not work? What can I do differently when I try or iterate this thing again? So whether it's a business idea, whether it's, you know, trying something new, whether it's planning something or whatever the case may be, whatever you're interested in, fail forward, fail often. And also you'd be very surprised if you allow people to help, how many people are willing to help you do whatever you're interested in. And that's been something that, again, I've been very blessed to have an amazing team. So fail forward, fail often. Don't be too hard on yourself. And please engage with STEM Social. Again, if you're a Black aspiring established STEM professional, you know, you're looking for community, whether it be in person or online, we got you. We're actually going to go international this year as well. So this is going to be a very big year for us.
That's incredible.
And yeah, follow us on STEM Social. It's STEMSOULCIAL. So soul is intentional. And then for me personally, it's I'm Camille Smith on all socials. My content, I kiki. It's very multi-hyphenate S. You know, we're talking about early career. We're talking about being in STEM. We're talking about vacations. We're talking about a bunch of different stuff. So if you're into that type of thing, yeah, definitely engage. But yeah, you know, I really do appreciate, Paul, you even thinking to have me. Again, I want to give your flowers. I talked a little bit earlier about how I love being affirmed, you know, when I'm doing things. Like, this is really, really cool. And I really hope that you are able to sit with the platform and the community that you've been able to build. And I'm just happy to be a part of it.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. And what you were talking about, like the fail often, fail early, fail often, especially don't be too hard on yourself. I think that is a key thing for us as high achieving STEM professionals, is that we don't want to fail. It's like, what do you fail? It's like, I want to be successful. And then not being too hard on yourself when you fail, because failure really is the pathway to success. There's no one achieved anything that didn't fail first. So that's what keeps me motivated to keep trying to keep moving.
Yeah, I'll also leave y'all with this. Something recently that one of my professors told me in school is that if everything worked out the way it was supposed to, or like, you know, you set a goal, immediately accomplished it, A, life would be super, super boring. But especially within STEM, we probably wouldn't have jobs. Like, our jobs are literally to solve when things don't go well, or like when things break, or like, you know, we're troubleshooting something. And I was like, oh, like that makes a lot of sense. Like all of the theorems, you know, that we learn in these thermos, these mass transfers, whatever class or coursework you have, are literally a function of something did not work well or was not working to the standard that they had. So then they had to do work in order to, you know, do something else. So like someone had to fail. Everything in general, somebody initially had to fail to be able to get us to wherever we are. So that helped me. Hopefully that helps somebody reframe, you know, how they view failing. But the most successful people fail so often, and they fail unapologetically. Just, okay, now that this is done, now we know that we have to do XYZ. I'm like, wow, that is so crazy. So I'm trying to get better at it too. So hopefully as a community, we can get better at failing forward, failing often.
Yeah, very, very true. I failed so many times. I could fail several podcast episodes with different things I try to fail that. But that's really crucial. But really turning to the audience, I know you got something from Camille's story. Like I know we wrapped it up talking about the failure part, but really just understanding the journey and really learning more about yourself, whether it's mini golf or getting people together or trying to determine what you want to do with your career. Just keep asking the questions, keep being curious, keep enjoying life, and you too can be incredible.
Be sure to rate and review this podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. We'll see you here next time. And be incredible. Incredible. Incredible.
Have you enjoyed listening to the Incredible Paul Leadership Podcast? Are you looking for a way to support it? Maybe you just want some swag. Get some Incredible Paul merch today. We have shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, and so much more. Go to incrediblepaul.org/merch. incrediblepaul.org/merch. Looking forward to seeing your Incredible Paul.